Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. So choice, all the rage. Hearing a lot about it. I think every day I hear, we just want choice, don't you know? And in fact, you know, having gone through looking at a bunch of different healthcare plans as my wife and I are looking into changing health insurance companies, the choices that were offered, wow, bad, worse, horrible. I think I've had just about enough of choice when it comes to healthcare. When I think most people just want, when you get sick, you go to the doctor. If you get really sick, you don't go broke. Seems sane, seems rational. And I think the same thing about education. We hear the same kind of rhetoric from the right wing, the Betsy DeVos's of the world, saying it's all about choice. Well, here's the thing. If you've got two bad choices, what choice do you really have? I say, let's have one choice and make it really good. I'm here to talk a little bit about that and his latest piece, Netflix and the Myth of Personalization. I've asked Peter Green to come talk with us. He's a high school English teacher, also a fantastic blogger over at Comeducation. Peter, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you so much for having me.
So I got to tell you, I've just about had it with this idea of choice. I'm just about up to here with it.
Well, I'm sorry, but it's probably not going to stop being sold to you anytime soon.
But here's the thing, and that's the right way to put it, sold to me. If I had real choice, if you had real options, that's one thing. But when you're being, you know, shoveled bad or worse, I don't know that there's really an option there.
Well, choice, as it's been given to us in healthcare, as they're trying to sell it to us in education, it's all about consumers getting the choice that they're willing to give us. We get the choices that the people in charge say we can have, and those aren't necessarily the choices that anybody wants.
Right. So in looking at this, I mean, because, you know, masterfully, and you got to give credit to the right wing because they've done a really great job of attacking public education and convincing a number of us that, well, we need these bad choices and that the privatization is the right way to go and that we should all have our own little plans and everything should be personalized and all of that. You got to give them credit. I mean, it's masterful.
It is. It's well done, and it's an appealing argument. It just sort of skips over some facts what are being dealt with. When it comes to personalization, what we're personalizing is not the product, but the means of selling it to you. The piece that you're referring to, we talk a little bit about Netflix, and Netflix doesn't provide a variety of products or shows to meet your personalized taste. What they do is they look at your preferences and what you gear towards, and they take the one product that they have to sell, and they personalize the marketing. So if you think, you know, if you're more of a fan of comedic type stuff, then here's a trailer for their new product that highlights the comedy. And if you're someone who likes directors who are good with images and good pictures on the screen, then here's a trailer that highlights that. So you're not really getting a personalized product. You're getting personalized marketing.
Right. And, you know, it's interesting you bring that up. And the article just, you know, kind of hit a chord with me because my wife and I just had this conversation of going, you know, we'll watch something. And at the end of it, we look at each other and go, how exactly was that funny? How did that end up being a comedy? There was nothing funny about it other than the fact that we sat here for 2 hours waiting for it to get funny.
Yeah. The problem with that kind of personalization is that it stretches what might work for you. And is hoping that you won't notice that they didn't really quite hit the mark.
Yeah, and it rarely ever does hit the mark. But here's the thing, and you know, Netflix is one thing, but the future of my children and the future of this country, an entire generation's future, I don't know that I want to risk at bad marketing schemes.
I don't think we can afford those, but that's what we've been getting with school choice all along. What we've been saying is, here are the choices that we think people in your community need. And it's telling that so frequently when large charter choice operations move into an urban area, they don't amplify the local voice. They don't involve members of the community. They don't involve the people who are there. Basically, people come in from outside with their business plan and say, here are the choices that we think you need, without ever really listening to what choices the people there actually want. And, of course, the pitch is most commonly, well, rich folks, middle-class folks, get to exercise choice by choosing where they can buy a house, where they can choose to live. That puts them in the, that gives them a choice of a particular school system.
Right.
But what they get in that school system is a school system that responds to them. They don't need six school systems in that community because they can pick up the phone, they can go to a school board meeting, they can walk to the next block, and they can talk to the people who are in charge of that school system and say, hey, here's what I wish I could see. Hey, here's what's not working for me. They can get responses. They can get some service, some response to what they want from their one local school district. Whereas in these charter choice systems, we're being given a bunch of choices which are not only not good choices, but are not responsive choices. They're run by people who aren't there in the community. They're run by people who aren't elected by the community. They're run by people who are not there to respond to what the community wants. And in many cases, they're not even pretending to attempt to find out what the community wants.
Yeah, and that's the part that gets me. They're not even attempting because it's this patriarchal, we know best, we know what we're doing, and we don't need anything from you.
Yeah, we know best. We know what you need. We know what kind of schools would best serve you. So just be quiet and accept one of the choices of medicine that we've offered you.
And the reason I think this is important to bring up, especially now, is because what we're seeing on the next push of education, quote-unquote, reform, is going to be these, you know, individual plans that are going to all be computerized. In fact, I foresee at some point in my lifetime, if not mine, at least my kids' lifetime, where there'll be no more teachers at the front of the classroom. Everybody's just going to have their own little laptop, probably in, you know, a corner somewhere, and they'll be just, you know, that's it. That's what you get. Because it's individual to your personalized. It's you personally. It's everything that you need. And, people be damned.
Well, I think that's the dream for some folks. I sometimes have my doubts about how easy it will be for them to sell that. And certainly it's not going to be something that will be sold to those districts where the middle class and upper class people have a voice. No rich folks are lined up saying, yeah, that's what I want for my kid. Point them in front of the computer all day.
But here's the thing, Peter. No rich folks have schools that have, 40 kids in it that are taking high-stakes testing and don't have recess or nurses or libraries or any of that stuff. Upper-class kids, the rich kids, they've got all of those things, small class sizes, individualized attention, all of those things. So they're already getting what they want slash need. It's the rest of us that our kids are being left behind.
Well, yes. That kind of reminds me of the other point that I find myself often making about choice. My argument is that nobody really wants choice. If you're sitting in a restaurant and your favorite meal is in front of you, you don't sit there and go, well, I wish I had six more choices to choose from. You don't want choice. You want what you want.
Right.
And I think the first choice for many folks, if not most folks in communities, is a community school that meets their child's needs, that's fully funded, that's well-staffed, and that does a good job for the children. And I don't think choice is what people want. I think those quality schools are what people want.
Yep. And all of the choice stuff, it just muddies the water. And, all of these alternatives is just another way to drain the resources and the tax dollars out of our coffers and into the pockets of, those who are looking for profit. Because I think that's an important point to make, because I've been talking about this choice thing for a while. I don't think we want as much choice as being thrown on us. I just think we want things to work.
Yes, I think that's exactly right. I think people want things to work, and I think some of the support that we've seen in some areas for choice is not because people want choice. It's because they're frustrated with trying to get politicians and leadership to give them what they want in the school that they already have.
Yeah. I remember a couple years ago I had one of the state senators here in Pennsylvania on the show who was pushing the voucher thing. And he was pushing the choice angle, saying you could choose to take your kid anywhere you wanted to go. And I'm going, really? I can take my golden ticket and I can go to, I don't know, Philadelphia in the Abington Friends School or Germantown Academy or one of those places where kindergarten's 40 grand. And this golden ticket, this wonderful voucher is going to get my kid in there. And he, and I don't know if he was just that badly ill-informed or if he was just trying to sell a bill of goods. He's going, yeah, absolutely. The golden ticket will get your kid in there. And I go, if that's the case, if we all have that choice and they can't deny me, sign me right up. Although I know that that's not reality, but that's what he was pitching.
Well, and vouchers are even, I mean, vouchers are the worst case scenario of choice. They're so bad that even charter supporters in some cases don't support them. Because vouchers, as envisioned, with no strings attached, it is not school choice, it is the school's choice. The school gets to say, well, no, sorry, we can't choose you here. And they can do that officially, and they can do that unofficially. The Washington Post just ran a piece this week from a mother who was trying to navigate with her daughter, and she happened to be a white mother with a Latina daughter. And when it was just the mom there, she talked to some schools and said, oh, yes, we're loaded with choices. We'll think your daughter would be a lovely fit here. She comes back later in the day with a photo of her daughter, and all of a sudden all the spots are full.
Now all the bells and whistles go off.
Yeah, all of a sudden there's no room for this particular child. And, of course, in most of these schools there's no room for children who are learning English as a second language. There's no room for children with special needs that are going to be expensive to take care of. And it is like the health care and saying, well, you know, you're perfectly free to choose this thing that won't work for you if you like. Many of these charters say, well, you're free to send your special needs student here. We're just not going to have any program for them. But if you want them to come here and try to survive without any kind of support or help, you're certainly free to do that. And that's not choice.
Yeah, I'm with you. So let me ask you, in looking at this, I mean, because, again, back to that frame that I do believe all parents want what's best for their kids. They want them to get the best opportunities, the best education, the best chance to make it in the world. What do we want? What do we do? Because look, coming from that perspective, I just want what's best for my kids. And we're being shoveled all of this stuff. What do we do?
I think we have to demand quality schools for everybody. And of course, in Pennsylvania, we've got a problem because we don't want to put enough money on the table to fund schools equitably. So we keep trying to come up, I think choice is often an answer to the question to how can we look like we're fixing this problem without actually spending any money fixing this problem. And of course you'll hear the refrain, well, you can't fix public schools by throwing money at them. And yet we certainly seem to believe that we can make charter and choice schools wonderful by throwing money at them. apparently you just have to throw money at the right things, or maybe with the right spin on it. I don't know. But we have to fund the schools. We have to put the money into the schools so that they can survive. We have to stop coming up. I mean, a good start would be to stop floating these plans that drain money away from the public schools but don't get us anything in return. For a rural area like mine, and I'm up in northwest Pennsylvania, basically out in the country, we could improve schools immeasurably if we passed a law today that closed all cyber schools tomorrow. Because the amount of money that's being drained out of particularly rural districts as a percentage of the total budget for the school being drained by cyber schools is insanely large. And, of course, what is anybody getting for this? I mean, there's a small handful of students who are well served by cyber schools, who have a special set of needs that are best met by cyber schools. But the vast majority of students do not fall into that category, and they are draining hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars out of these smaller school districts for nothing.
Yeah.
For a system that we already know is not serving students well at all.
And it's my understanding that none of the cyber charter schools have made AYP in the state, I think, ever?
No, that's correct. We've got studies from Credo, which is generally pro-charter, and other studies that indicate that your child would be better off staying home for a year playing video games than being enrolled in cyber school.
But isn't that basically what cyber school is? I mean, I remember Cyber Appreciation Week, and there were a bunch of kids tweeting out pictures of themselves sitting in front of two screens, where one they had the homework up and one they were cheating on, one where the screen was all video games. I mean, basically, that's my understanding. It's just play.
Well, for many students, it is. I mean, it promises a lot of easy school, and it's marketed. I mean, the system of cyber schools is built around people making their numbers by recruiting
Yeah, my favorite one was the radio commercial of the little girl who did the tap dancing, and you hear her tap dancing like crazy in the background, and no other goes, oh, I'm so thankful to the Cyber Charter because little Susie can do tap dancing. I'm going, really? Oh, that's the best argument you can come up with?
Well, and there were, I remember the ads and the billboards all over the place saying, basically saying, you know, if your child was going to be a sports star, then this was a good way to get school out of the way and still leave them plenty of time to practice.
No sense reading and writing and doing any of that stuff because your kid's going to be in the NBA. That's beautiful.
And it would be hilarious if it were not costing us so much money.
If it weren't tragic, I mean, you look at some of these, and you know, I think of the Frontier Virtual Cyber Charter School in Philadelphia that had like 60 kids enrolled, and they were all supposed to get computers and internet access and all that, and it turns out none of them got any of that stuff, and it was just a huge drain and a huge ripoff, a huge scheme that eventually I think a couple people went to jail over. But still, you know, you've got all these kids now. Who have lost their opportunity to get an education. And then you have a school district who has to remediate all of this and go back and clean up the mess of these schemes.
We're stealing money and support from the students who are still in the bricks and mortar, who very often include the cyber school students who come back to public school. So we're stealing money from the system, and we're stealing years from the students.
Yeah, well, it sounds like a Wall Street win-win. We can get the education money for them. When they don't get the education, they get to go to prison, and we get the benefit from private prisons. Again, the article, Netflix and the Myth of Personalization, we got a link over at thericksmithshow.com. Just click on Peter Green's name. Take you right there. I suggest check out the great blog, Curmudgeocation. Fantastic stuff there. Peter, I appreciate you taking some time for us, sharing your thoughts, and banging this around with us. Thanks so much.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Always great talking with you. Thanks so much. Quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
90% of the wealth. 10% of the people. Own 90% of the wealth. Where do you fit in? Take a look at yourself. 10% of the people. Own 90% of the wealth.
Where smart policy and sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.